What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the Diamond Download. We got Chase over here. We got Cardinal Mason over here. Miami, California. We just celebrated 4th of July. It's my first 4th of July. I like the way America does it, man. What'd you do today?
Yeah, you're Canadian, so you guys always celebrate on the 1st. Actually, a couple of years ago, I was on my honeymoon, and I was in Canada on Canadian Independence Day, so it was pretty cool, and that's how I learned about it. But on my end, we went to like a neighborhood nearby where they did a big parade. They have tons of like fire trucks and old cars and just trailers, and people are throwing candy to the kids and they're playing music, and it's a really cool time. There probably was maybe hundreds of people, maybe like 1,000 potential people that were like lined up on the street, and also including the people in it, horses. It was really cool. What about yourself?
Wow, man. Wherever you live sounds a little bit like what people want America to look like. Like, it sounds so wholesome. Like, mine was like, whatever. It was a bunch of degenerate 20-year-olds. We got on a boat. We watched the fireworks from the water. Had some fun. Got home at like 1 a.m. Still had a good sleep. Feel great.
That's amazing. Yes, that's late for a school night. We're back at it today after the 4th. So that's awesome, though. Yeah.
Dude, the whole time, I was like, because we were all having a good time. Like, we were throwing back drinks and stuff like that. And I kept forgetting it was Tuesday because it felt like a Friday or a Saturday.
Yeah, for sure.
And like, we went hard for a regular day. So I can't imagine, like, you know, if 4th of July was actually on like a Friday, I'd be in a coma right now. I wouldn't be here.
Oh my God. Well, I'm glad you're here, my friend.
Cool, man. So let's get into these topics. So I got a couple of good ones here. So one thing I've been talking a lot about with my friends is like, I keep asking everybody, like, what kind of entrepreneur are you? So like, there's a bunch of different specialties that people will have, like, in the world of business, and it's their special sauce, right? Like, it's the reason why they're good at what they do.
Yeah.
And I think, so I have a couple of friends who are like money flippers, right? Where it's like, they are always trying to figure out how they can turn a dollar into like $1.20 or $1.50. Right. I have some people that are like more like visionaries, where like they want to build something amazing that like no one's ever seen before.
Yeah.
Or like, how would you describe yourself as an entrepreneur? Like, would you put yourself into a bucket, or do you think you're one of a kind? Like, what do you think?
Yeah, I think I'm kind of like a dadpreneur right now. And what I mean by that, right, is like I'm trying to balance the dad kind of father thing with being a business owner and kind of an operator. And with that, like, I've realized that, like, I really like being kind of a lone wolf, you know, as Justin Wolf kind of calls like a solopreneur. I kind of love just doing things now by myself. And they can be as big or as small as I want, because I'm not reliant or dependent on someone, and no one's dependent or reliant on me. So for example, like this LinkedIn business that I started, you know, I've got like 40 or 50 people paying like $500 a month, and I've got one employee. She's great. She's amazing. She runs a whole show. Like, I want to do more businesses like that, you know, that kick off 10, 20, 30 grand a month in profit that I can start, I can work on for a couple of days, a couple of weeks, and then just pass off to someone that's a really good operator and employee, and then move on to the next one and kind of just stack these things. So I'm trying to maximize time spent offline while still trying to maximize income online. So it's kind of like this weird dynamic.
Okay. Okay. Think of it this way, right? Like, if you were going to be joining a team, like if you were going to be a co-founder with like 3 or 4 other people,
yep.
why would someone want to bring you on? Like, what are you uniquely good at that no one else is good at? Like, you have content.
Yeah.
Does that apply to everything? Like, what's your thing?
Yeah. I think like right now, like the way that I look at myself is like, I look at myself as a content creator, and then the businesses I have are the ways in which I monetize the content I create. So really, I think I'm good. And kind of my value proposition is like user acquisition, marketing, scaling, those types of things, where every business that I'm involved in right now, a lot of what I do is sales, marketing, distribution. So I think that's the stuff that I'm really good at. And there's everything else that I'm really bad at: legal, ops, hiring, firing, accounting, finance, etc. I suck at those things.
Yeah. Yeah. Same, bro. I don't like that.
Yeah. What about you? How would you describe yourself?
So I've been thinking about this a lot, and so I do have an answer ready. But I think that like my biggest strength is my EQ. Like, I think, I can't remember if we've talked about this already, because I've talked about this so much over the last couple of days. So stop me if you've heard this already. But Like I feel like I have the ability to read people's minds. And that comes from like when I was a kid, like I was like a super like anxious kid. Like I was constantly thinking about like what other people were thinking, whether it was about me or about other people or about other things or situations or something. Like I'm just constantly trying to like think, like if I were in this person's shoes, like how would I feel? What would I think? What would I do? So that lends itself really well to number one, making content, because I know what people want to see and hear. Two is positioning, right? So I can like build a product and frame it in a way where it's like, I know how to make people care about it. And I think like it also helps with like running a team, because like I always want to make sure that everyone that works with me is like super well taken care of. I never want anyone to feel like they're being left out. And I think like a lot of people who run teams, like a founder, right, who's running a team, like maybe it's not their job like specifically to just take care of the team. Like if you're like HR, like some sort of management level, like, yeah, your job is to make sure that everyone's good. But like, I feel like that's out of scope for a lot of founders. And a lot of people think that their founders are kind of like rude or assholes or whatever.
Touch. Yeah.
They just don't think about it. But like, yeah, that's something I think about a lot. And so I think like, that's what I bring to the table. I'm really like a people person, you know?
Yeah. I think like for what you said, kind of like the copywriting, the marketing, the email marketing, like those synergies, like when you understand the human psyche and you understand people and you understand what empowers them, what makes them take action. Like, I think like that psychology and that kind of empathy and that kind of connection with humans, dude, that's so core and central to everything that you're doing and I'm doing. And I think that's what makes us dangerous and good is the fact that like, we care about people, we care about profit, we care about the things in which allows us and the other people around us to get more of what we want.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, man. Cool. That was good. All right. Number two, what's something you want to get better at that you've never gotten around to? So like, I'm thinking specifically a skill of business or in business. I'll open with mine and you can tell me if yours is similar or not even close. All right. So, okay. Everyone knows that I work with Ben on Copy MBA. I know my strengths and he knows his, and there's a lot of things. Like, I feel like honestly, like if I had to fire Ben, like there's a lot of stuff I probably wouldn't even be able to do. Like my biggest weakness is that I've never learned Facebook ads or TikTok ads or any sort of like paid traffic. I don't know how any of that works. I don't like pressing buttons in there. I don't like looking at it. I don't know what a lot of these metrics are. Like, I don't know what MER is. I know what like CPMs are, and I know what like CAC is and stuff like that. But other than that, like there's like a lot of stuff I don't understand. And for some reason, I just like don't care to learn it now. But I do think it would be helpful if like, it would sort of round me out a little bit more if like, if I could learn basic Facebook ads, and I could probably figure it out. I'm probably kind of just being a little wuss, but like, I really want to figure that out. Like if someone came to me and they were like a local business or something like that, or it was like a family friend and they were like, hey, can you teach me how to do Facebook ads? I wouldn't know what to say. I'm 3 years into the game. I've never touched a Facebook ad. What's your thing?
Yeah, that's a really good one. I think I definitely agree with that one. I think like one or two more that are kind of related for me outside of the Facebook ads or paid acquisition would be like understanding like real estate and taxes, like understanding like how you can leverage real estate purchases to offset taxes. Like, I think that, and then the other one would be like understanding, yeah, like finance, like debt and those types of things and interest and whatnot. So stock market. So I think for me, less around like the things that we do day to day as marketers outside the Facebook ads, I think, or paid acquisition, I'd say that's a big one. And then in a different business realm, like really understanding like accounting, taxes, finance, real estate, just because I feel like I've been talking to so many friends, I've been making so much money in so many plays, whether it's like Airbnbs or they're buying like apartment complexes and renovating them and flipping them. And there's one that I found out about recently in my neighborhood. There's like this elderly care center, I guess, for lack of a better word, where they have 6 bedrooms in our neighborhood. And most of the houses in my neighborhood are 4 bedrooms. So they did like an addition. And then they have people there 24/7 that are taking care of the, you know, the elderly. So 60 plus. And I've just heard that like, it's absolute cash cow. Like you charge insurance, you know, $3,000 to $5,000, $4,000 to $6,000 per room. You know, the mortgage on these things are probably $5,000 a month. You're probably keeping, you know, $10,000-$15,000 a month in profit for a fairly hands-off operation after you kind of set it up and you do it the right way. So I think that's kind of like interesting too, but I was researching it last night and like, oh man, I don't even understand like all the licenses you have to get and all the tests you have to take and all these things. And it's like, well, how do you know how much to buy it for? How do you know how much to put down? Like, I just feel like so insecure and like a noob with that stuff, but I would love to get better at it.
Dude, I feel that like literally just because you said that, like now I really want to get into it. Like that I never really cared about like tax stuff because like I would do the bare minimum and save some money on taxes. And it was like, whatever, I'd rather just like pay the full amount. Cause like, I'm supposed to pay these anyway. Like it's money I've already in my head sort of like gotten over, like not having.
Yeah.
Now, like, so I could say like, if I'm making, you know, 300-400K a year and it's like, do I care enough to like get back 30K and like spend all this time thinking about it? And the answer is like, no, like whatever, like 30K, whatever. But like, if I like right now, if I don't do anything, I might have like a $1.5 million tax bill this year. Just like it's getting scary. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, I have to do something because I'm not willing to like lose, you know, if I can get back $500,000 for the year, like that's worth it to me. That's worth it to me. So like, I got to talk to somebody or I got to like learn this stuff myself. Cause like, I don't want to rely on an accountant who like doesn't really give a shit about me. Like I'd rather like learn myself so I can like at least ask the right questions. But yeah, dude, that's a huge one. Let's take a course together. If anybody has a course on like taxes, then hook us up. We'll go halvesies on it.
Yeah, dude. I want to be able to save on taxes and stuff too while doing it legally, playing the game, but without having to move to Puerto Rico. Cause all my family's in California. I'm not trying to move. And I think the second thing too is like, dude, I've gone through like 3 or 4 accountants and CPAs in the last few years because everyone I've hired doesn't understand like what we do. And therefore they can't like be very strategic because like they still don't get it. Most of the accountants that I've worked with in CPAs, they've been more traditional, old school, dealing with like doctors, lawyers, real estate professionals, you know, whatever. So that's also been a struggle too, is like there needs to be more folks that are like our age, you know, between in the probably I'd say like 30 to 40, because you want someone that has enough experience, been doing it for a while, maybe even early to late 20s could potentially work, but you know what I'm saying? Like, so I'm trying to find someone really good that like gets it, gets me, speaks my language and isn't some, you know, 50 or 60 year old that doesn't get what I do, unfortunately. Sorry. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man. There's not many people like that. I mean, I think it's kind of growing. Like there's some people on Twitter that are like specialists in like what we do. Like they really understand it, which is cool, but I'm sure they're booked up and they're super expensive. So
Yeah,
man. Yeah, let's figure it out. Anyway, okay. So the next one was top tweets that you've read recently. Like I went through and I grabbed a couple of these. There's really only like 2 people on Twitter that I read like every single tweet. It's Bowtide Sales Guy, who we've talked about before, and Brute DeForce, which I don't know if you know him, but he's that guy. I think he's like your neighbor or something like that. He lives very close to you.
It is.
I think he's West Coast. So you probably didn't have time to prepare some tweets. So I'm assuming you didn't do it, but I did. So how about I read you a couple of tweets? I got 3 here. So I'll give you these tweets and then you just give me like a 30 to 60 second like breakdown of like what you think and if you agree with it or disagree. Okay. So this is from Bowtide Sales Guy. He goes, when you listen to yours or other sales calls, do you hear 2 adults speaking, or is it more like a child salesperson speaking to a critical parent prospect? Everyone has these 3 ego states, child, adult, parent. But unfortunately, the default is this child-parent dynamic. The child is scared and supplicating for the approval of the parent. The only child you should be bringing into your sales calls is the naturally curious child. After that, it should be 2 adults having an honest conversation, whether it makes sense to do business together. You can't do that if you operate as a child, but put the prospect on a pedestal as a parent.
Wow. What do you think of that? That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I'm still processing, but that makes a lot of sense. That's really interesting. I haven't done a sales call lately, but I felt like, yeah, the evolution was like this shy, timid, scared guy where it's like, I don't want to set this price of 5 grand or 10 grand or 15 grand. Like, what if they say no? And then you do enough sales calls and you realize that, like, if you believe in your service and if you believe in the work that you do and that you're going to make them more money than they're paying you, dude, it's a win-win. And it's like, can I get on more calls like this? So yeah, I definitely have realized like in my own evolution that I've probably gone from that immature, childish, scared kid type persona to 2 adults having a conversation, being very transparent, putting your guard down, saying, hey, this is what we've got to offer. This is the type of brands we work with. This is how we could help you. You know, what are your thoughts, right? And really adding value and over delivering. And then if they say yes, it's like, cool, they're a great fit. If they say no, maybe we'll get them in the future, right? It's like, I'm not acting out of desperation, you know? So I agree with that. What are your thoughts?
I think like, if you take sales out of it, I think like a lot of people default to child parent dynamics. There's people where I'll talk to them and like they're older than me and like I'll be sort of reaching for their validation and they are kind of just being who they are and like not talking down, but there's a clear status gap.
Yeah.
And that's also been where it's flipped, right? Where even if someone is older than me or like the same age, or like I kind of feel like the parent because I know more and I'm, you know, I've done more and whatever. I just like, you know what I mean? So
yeah.
He's saying like Bowtie sales guy is saying like ideally you want to be two adults talking.
Yeah.
But like, if you're going to be selling something like this, like I feel like you want to be the parent and you want the prospect to be the child. Because like you, like if you have that position of leverage, it's going to end up that way anyway. Because like how it should be going is, you know, the prospect is on the call with you because they have a big problem that they believe yeah. the solution for. And so you want to sort of like, they should be asking you if you can work together instead of the other way around, right? Not a lot of agencies operate that way. Like a lot of agencies will just be begging for their first 10 clients and like hoping that someone hires them, even though they have no results and nothing to show for. So anyway, I think this is a good tweet. All right, here's another one. This one's short. A woman's love for you is proportionally relative to how fast she'd collapse if she was in your shoes.
A woman's love for you is proportional to if she was in your shoes.
So basically, right? Like sort of like it's sort of like a neo-traditional look on relationships where, so this guy, Brute, his like philosophy is that like, as a man, you should be, you know, doing like basically putting yourself through hell to protect the ones you love and conquering or whatever. Right. And so his ideal relationship is like, you basically get rained on by arrows and you protect your woman. And if she had to be where you are, she'd be like, yeah, no way. And I guess this is basically just saying like, if she trusts you more, if you're more competent, if you handle more stress, that's proportional to how fast she would, how much she loves you. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know. I've never thought about it like that. I've always thought that like, you know, right now as being like a, you know, a dad of two daughters, it's like, you know, I do the things that like I'm good at doing, right? Like I'm one that's working and doing this because I genuinely love and am passionate about this. And with my wife, she was really good, really smart at this, but she's always wanted to be like just a mom. It's like her thing. That's like her dream and her calling. So I kind of feel like it goes both ways where it's like, you know, she might not want to do the things that I do, nor be able to potentially. I think she could, but whether she'd want to or not, I don't know. And for me to be like a stay-at-home dad doing everything that she does, like, I don't know if I could do it. It's really hard. So I don't know that it's as much of a one-way street as he describes potentially, but I think that like it's equal where there's so many things that I've seen other people do them. Like, dang, I got a lot of respect. I could never do that. Right. I don't know. It's interesting.
No, I think you're right. Like, so you said the word, right? So love, basically what he's saying is love equals respect. Yeah. And so his audience is male. So for anybody who's listening to this thinking that like, you know, women are supposed to just sit there and chill and then guys, like they can't do anything. And guys just like, you know, take all the responsibility. Like it's not like that, right? Obviously it's a two-way street.
Yeah.
But like, if, you know, if the person you're with is doing things that you don't think you could do, that creates respect and yep. it creates a stronger bond, which I think is a good way to look yep. at it. And I think like if you reverse engineer it and, you know, you want someone to sort of respect you and love you, you have to take risks. You have to do things that are uncomfortable. You have to do things that no one else wants to do. And people will look to you as a leader and a light. And I think that's a good way to go about not just romantic relationships, but also like personal friendships, right?
Yeah, dude, 100%. I didn't have time to pull actual tweets, but like from memory, there's one specific tweet that kind of stands out to me. I think it was Sahil Bloom who posted it. he posted about like this article that came out and kind of his, I think his, it was his like, his context or kind of like the way in which he interpreted it, where like in 20 years from now, like, and this is speaking to people as families, he's got a family, I've got a family, like the only people that are going to remember the fact that like you work instead of attending like important life events and milestones is your kids. Like the only people in 20 years that are going to remember that like you missed everything because it works are like your kids. It was kind of like this really interesting perspective, right? Like as I've gone from like, dude, a workaholic in my, you know, early to mid 20s, like only caring about work, really believing in like hustle culture. And obviously I still think there's an element of like, if you just brute force and kind of outwork other people and you kind of just have this mindset that you can't be stopped, I think that's really cool. And I think that you'll do a lot. But moving into this now, this mindset of like wanting to be there for my family and not have like regrets on like the deathbed, that like just the title of that alone, let alone from like his analysis of it, was really impactful of like, wow, like how do you maximize your output without, you know, maximizing your time and missing the things that like the money is supposed to give you, right? I think like money in my mind now equals freedom. Making money and being able to build these high leverage things gives you freedom to be able to go do the things that you want. Maybe you want to go work more. Maybe you want to golf. Maybe you don't want to work at all. Like whatever it is. I don't know. I think that post that he made probably about a month ago is really interesting.
Yeah, I was trying to look for it. There's a bunch of different things that he said. You said it was about a month ago.
Yeah, a couple of weeks to a month ago. Just yeah, the only people that remember you working super late and missing things is like your children.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, I think that makes sense. It also sounds like it's geared more towards people who are like workaholics at a job that doesn't appreciate them.
Yeah, so, I think that's
like
fair.
For you, I mean, like you get to work from home, right? You don't have to go into an office. I don't have to go into an office. Like I think like I definitely agree with that. But I also don't want people to think that's an excuse to like not do shit, because it's like, oh, well, I'm just going to like, you know, do the bare minimum and barely get by. It's like, no, like what you've done is you have the best of both worlds, where like you get a lot of freedom in time, but you also have the ability to basically like your daughter's going to be, she's going to get a Birkin bag for like her 12th birthday. You know what I mean? Like she's set. Your wife is set. Like everyone in your next, you know, two generations is good. So like you're doing the work now and it's high leverage work and you're not overworking yourself at all, but like people need to know, like you got to build that first.
Correct. Yeah. There was a lot that people didn't see from like, you know, early on. So, you know, recently. So yeah, dude, 100%. This was a good episode. I like this one.
Yeah, man. Very good. All right. Well, y'all know where to find us at Cardinal Mason on TikTok and Twitter, at Ecom Chase Diamond, No A and Diamond on Twitter. And you can find him on LinkedIn just by typing in C, and it's going to be the first recommendation that pops up. People knows exactly what you're trying to type in when you type in C.
Okay. Heck yeah. Thanks. Appreciate for coming you, out. Brother. All right, man. Cheers.